Yes, you hit the right podcast button. This is Casualty Friday with your host, the man who scared the shit out of campers is Jason, Mr. Kane Hodder, and the woman who stole campers' hearts in sleepaway camp, Miss Felissa Rose, and I am Tiffany Shepis, who fucking hates camping. Welcome to our Casualty Friday bitch session. You guys.
Oh my gosh, I have to say something about you. And Miss Tiffany Shepis, our beautiful scream queen who stole our heart in Victor Crowley when she died because we just couldn't help her.
We could, they could not do it, these horrible friends.
I had 3 hours of makeup on and I still cried when Tiffany died. No, I did not. Fuck
yes,
that.
He did. No, he did. He's a big soft, our big baked potato. Everybody on Twitter last week was actually talking about how you are a massive softie and they were super excited that you had a briefcase and a fanny pack and a mullet.
Okay, I'm going to kill them all. So get me their addresses.
It's true.
I thought you had a New Year's resolution where you were going to be kind and gentle and sweet and not kill people, Mr. Kane Hodder.
Yeah, what happened to that?
I know we have people in the waiting room. Can I tell a quick story?
Go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up at the house in Park City, Utah, and I find myself, for the most part, very calm here. I went into the gas station recently because there's a Subway in there. And I was standing there waiting to order a sandwich. And there was a guy waiting for a sandwich with no mask on. And I looked at him. If I have to wear a fucking mask, everybody does.
Yeah.
It's not the health thing. I just don't like wearing it. But if I have to, you have to. So I said to him, "Hey, bro, you got a mask?" He looked at me. Didn't say anything. I said, "Do you have a mask?" He said, "Yeah, I probably do." I said, "You want to put it on?" And he said to me, "Mind your own business."
Whoa.
To which I, of course, responded, "Fuck you." And he gave me a dirty look and moved toward me a little bit. And I said, "Oh, are you a tough guy?" And he got right up in my face, trying to intimidate me. And I said to him, "Do it." Because I know there's cameras everywhere. And I've said this before, the best way to ever get into a fight is let the other guy throw the first fucking punch.
Hell yeah. Because
anyone that sees that is going to describe that. And I'm defending myself at that.
That
point.
Is the first rule of Miyagi-Do on Cobra Kai, is you don't throw the first punch.
We're talking about beating people up.
Oh, that was last week, Felissa. Come on. You know that shit ended right like the day after.
But I looked him in the face. He's right here. And I said, "Do it." And he did what every other bitch motherfucker does when he thinks he's tough and has to back down.
He kicked your ass.
And turned around and left. Like, I'm not worth it. Fuck off.
That's amazing.
Well, anyway.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have to fight Mr. Hodder. Good job.
Because, you know, before you get into a fight, a real fight, not just a pushing, shoving thing, your adrenaline pumps.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if anybody really has felt that, but I haven't felt that in quite a long time. But I was ready to knock that motherfucker out. And it didn't happen.
Real quick, we've been watching
it didn't, but.
Cobra Kai a lot in our house. And if you guys haven't been watching it, I highly recommend. It's just so much fun. And plus, we all know all those guys. So that makes it even more fun. It makes it more fun to watch. But it definitely gets your adrenaline going to a point where you're like, I had this conversation with Mia and her friend, who's our neighbor, Derek. And I'm like, "Yeah. And if you ever have to get in a fight, you just punch a bitch in the throat." And Sean's looking at me like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I'm like, "Well, they need to know." And Mia, you know, is like the kindest. Like, she's like, she really should have been Felissa's daughter. Like, just this nice and like loves everybody. She's like, "Punch them in the throat?" I'm like, "Absolutely." Yeah. Then in the vagina.
Okay, I'm going to say this. We have two beautiful guests waiting. We would never hit them, never beat them up. We absolutely adore them. Let's bring on our two great guests, Amanda Wiss and Tommy Hudson.
Oh, man.
Where are they?
We've got some friends. Oh, Amanda and Tommy. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Or
you had to listen to that story while you're waiting to come on.
They didn't get to listen to the story. That's the unfortunate part of our Zoom is they had to sit in the waiting room while Kane told us a story about how he was supposed to be nice guy nowadays, like it was a New Year's resolution, and now he's not anymore.
That lasted 30 days? 30 days about?
No, it lasted almost 40.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good for me.
That's awesome.
It's actually not that bad. And in fairness, he was doing it for the good of humanity. He was yelling at an anti-masker. So
yes. Oh yeah. You know what? I live in an apartment building and there are people walking around without masks all the time and it makes me homicidal. I'm freaking old and you're trying to kill me. Like, put a mask on.
What city are you in?
I'm in Studio City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A lot of people not wearing masks. Like really? When I'm out, like on my jogs. It's really surprising.
That surprises me.
Yeah. Do you guys think it's mostly like 20 somethings that are doing it? Or like, have you got any of you found like an age range of the douchey anti-masker, or is it across the board?
I think a lot of young people not, but see, I think it's across the board. In fact, today when I was out running, this was actually funny. I wanted to stop and actually talk to these gentlemen because it was so funny, is that it was five city workers working on the street or whatever. And as I come up to them, one guy has on a mask and the rest don't. And they're all sitting shoulder to shoulder, taking a break or something. And the one is telling the story about, I know it's really scary, man. I don't want to get it. My neighbor got COVID just by being outside talking to the guy next door. And he's telling the story and I want to go, you are sitting next to people and you don't have a mask on. Like, what is the point of your story? Anyway.
Oh, it's so frustrating. Yeah. So Kane is definitely, he is like a community liaison for anti-mask people. Like he goes around and tries to pick fights.
No,
I support you.
It's great that it's Kane because he is the masked. It's great that it's you who tells people to put masks on. You should be the face of wearing the mask because you are the masked man.
Oh,
so it makes a lot.
Did I show you this one that they gave me at my gym here?
Let's see it. What does it say? Oh, I've been wearing a mask. Oh, wait, was that since what year?
1980.
1980.
That's not really me, but.
That's
Jason's been wearing a mask since 1980. So
I like it.
Clever.
Tommy, how are people wearing masks where you are?
They are actually.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Tommy.
How are you? I think up here it's a little better. Sounds like such a terrible word to say, but I do think that it's a little better. I'm in British Columbia. And for some reason, I think that people probably took it a little more seriously a little sooner. And then we saw what was going on in the States and realized, oh, it's a really good thing that we did take it seriously because our numbers are lower and it's a little, better is really the best word, honestly. Yeah. So people are definitely masking up here, I think, much more compared to the States.
Do you have room in your house for all of Casualty Friday and our children and families?
Can we all come live with you? Can we all come up there and stay with you?
Yes. Please. I'm now officially inviting all of you to come and visit and stay as long as you like. But the problem is I don't think the government will let you actually cross the border.
Oh, that's right. We're not allowed to come into Canada unless we're filming. So we need to have somebody
make a movie.
Put up a movie for us in Canada.
Could just use those, those QAnon tunnels that are everywhere and just kind of cross over.
How long have you been there?
I have been here about 3 years.
Is it Vancouver, what? Tommy, or no?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Vancouver.
Stomping grounds. I know you have been here. So
I loved it. That was one of probably my very favorite Canadian city that I've been to. Because we did Jason X in Toronto, and it wasn't nearly as enjoyable for me as Vancouver was.
Vancouver's a great city. So much filming going on here. You're always like seeing great stuff going on, and just the water and the mountains. And it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I used to film up in Vancouver all the time, and did a series up there in the 90s, and I loved it. And then I haven't been up there. I mean, except to like visit Heather and Dave, if they're up there. I haven't been up there for work in a long time. I love filming up there though. Yeah.
And you should be filming all the time because you are amazing. And we were so excited. We have like our communal list of people that we are excited to have on the show. And you have always been on it. So when we started talking, I was like, yes, Amanda's going to come on.
I'm so excited. Well, because I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit, but just through social media. I like stalk you and then I'd like make you talk to me on social media.
Well, I'm sort of like an Instagram whore, you know. I'm very easy.
Instagram, but anyway.
Excuse me, I am very, very conservative on Twitter. Massive hoe bag on Facebook in regular life, but on Twitter, super conservative. But we were really excited. And I know that, I mean, for myself alone, obviously, I've talked about it on our show, huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan, but a lot of our fans of Casualty Friday are huge Fast Times at Ridgemont High fans and really? Better Off Dead. And I would just, the short end of it, like, I know that you were acting before these, but like, how did you get these jobs? Like, was it we've seen you in stuff and you just got called in? Were the audition process, like, walk us through it.
Okay, let's see. That's so cool. And you know what I have found, because having, you know, the honor, I guess, to get to go to conventions and meet people, that there's this crossover, especially with Better Off Dead and Nightmare on Elm Street fans. I know Tommy has noticed that too, but Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I just went on the audition for it and I walked in the room and they had me do an improv with Judge Reinhold. You know, Amy Heckerling was so young and it was just, everybody in the room was like my age basically. And they were like, I want you guys to do an improv of, that we were breaking up. And it's basically the scene they ended up using in the movie. And we just did this improv. And then by the time I got home, they had called and said that I had that part. And so,
that never happens.
I know. And the other thing that was neat about that, because it was, you know, a bigger studio film, was we had 2 weeks of rehearsal. So like everybody got to play and get super loose and, you know, learn how to work the fryer at American Burger and stuff.
Did you know any of the cast before? Like, had you seen them around? Had you been on anything with anybody? Or was it fairly all new?
It was all new to me, except I knew who Phoebe Cates was, because she was she was a supermodel, teen supermodel. Mm. So I knew who she was. And I didn't know who anybody was. But then we all, like, I ended up through the years, I've worked with everybody again or whatever. And then
Kelly Maroney, were you with her? Did you hang with her?
Yeah, you know what? The funny thing was, we didn't really ever work together in that movie, but we would be there on the same days. And the funny thing was, because now everybody's so famous from that movie, or most people are, I'm not, but a lot of the other people are.
You are to us.
Thank you. When Kelly was filming, people would gather and were screaming her name because she was such a huge soap star.
Oh my God.
So like it would interrupt filming because people were screaming her name, like, and crying, trying to get her attention. So I loved that because, people forget that she was a huge
Lion's Hope. Huge. Yeah. Huge.
That's, I remember, amazing.
Yeah. We all love Kelly Maroney. Kelly, we love you. And so it's sort of part of our girlfriend circle, right?
Yes.
Amanda, like, yes. We have our little girlfriend groups and we get to hang out at conventions and
it's fun. She's so sweet. And then Better Off Dead, again, it was just the director had seen, it happened twice. I did this TV movie when I was 20 and the director of Better Off Dead had seen it and Wes had also seen it. And it was something that it just caught their eye, because I did Nightmare on Elm Street and Better Off Dead back to back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. And so, they knew of me because of this movie called My Mother's Secret Life. with Lonnie Anderson. It was amazing.
Amazing. When John Cusack was, he wasn't famous yet, or had he done Say Anything already?
Yeah, he had done something. You knew he was about to break. Say Anything.
The Sure Thing.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
He'd done The Sure Thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I told these guys this story before, my daughter, you know how like everything just kind of has its moment to come back and be like, you know, pop culture. And my 16-year-old daughter became this huge fan of Better Off Dead and Say Anything, was absolutely in love with John Cusack. And, you know, everything in the room was John Cusack, was even telling me like, did you even know he had a small part in 16 Candles? And like became this just sort of junkie. And then she like started following him on Instagram. And she's like, Mom, he's so old. He's not. He still looks so good. But it in her head, he was a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, didn't quite put together that the movie was, you know, so many years old.
Amanda, do you ever see him at conventions? I recently stalked him and took photos.
He's at conventions?
At Days of the Dead. Yeah.
He started doing conventions. I haven't seen him. I know Diane Franklin has seen him. But I haven't seen him. He's so funny. He's very intense. What he turned me on to when we were filming, he turned me on to Tom Waits. I'd never heard of Tom Waits. I don't know why. And I just remember, and now it's a huge favorite of mine, but he was like, you've got to listen to this. And I was like, oh, okay. Cause I was like, I don't know. But he's so nice.
So great. Like intense is like the perfect word for him. And Johnny Depp, like you kind of have like the two most intense dedicated actors, you know, of our generation.
And Sean Penn, of course.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Piccoli, oh my gosh. All three of them.
Piccoli was my hero. Piccoli was the best.
Yeah. He was Loved funny. Him.
Did he you was... have a crush on any of them, Amanda?
Well, you know, I have to say I had a bit of a crush on Eric Stoltz. Because he was
really
and I remember he was my date to the premiere of Silverado. Oh. And I was, you know, very happy about that. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So
oh my gosh. Great. So all right, because I'm just an Elm Street nut, and Tommy, like clearly, you know, I think
Tommy's the historian
about anything Elm Street. Like I just need to know. When you got that script did you audition for Tina? Was it, that's who you were going to play, or did, like, I know a lot of those movies back then you audition for the lead and just sort of get what you get.
That's what it was. Yeah. Everybody read for Nancy, or the girls read for Nancy. And then, I read the script and it was really scary, and I hadn't really seen, I mean, I'd seen a couple old black and white horror films. I mean, growing up, half the time, we didn't have a television. I lived in a little beach town that played, you know, The Ghost and Mr. Chicken and Blackbeard's Ghost for 5 years. So like, I didn't see a whole lot of movies that came out. And then when I was in junior high, it switched to Billy Jack, and that played for 5 years. But so I read it. It was really scary. And I'd read some scary books. And so I talked to Wes about that. I was like, I don't know how to do this. And he's like, if you don't do anything, you just, you know, act in it. I was like, oh, okay. I thought like there was some special thing that I was going to learn to do. And so I read for Nancy, and then he had us come back, and Tommy knows, because Tommy was there during the interviews, but he called us back, and he put the people together in groups, and he had Heather and I read together, and then he brought in the two boys to read together, and we did an improv, and then he told us in the room we had the part.
What?
Wow. Oh my!
Wow.
Yeah. So, that's Amanda, right. Isn't that the right story, Tommy? That's how it goes, right?
He kind of found who he liked for each thing, and then wanted to make sure you kind of all gelled, and apparently you really, really did, and he realized he had his group, he had his kids that felt like real teenagers that everyone in the audience is going to relate to, and wow. He just kind of put it out by, you know, I like her, I like him, I like her, now let's see if it works. And, you know, to him it worked, and I think obviously it worked for everybody.
Yeah.
And Tommy, I don't know if I ever told you or Amanda that I had done a movie called The Hills Have Eyes 2, where I was doing stunts in it, doubling one of the big actors that I was way too small to double, but John Bloom from Hills Have Eyes 2 played the Reaper. And after that movie, Wes called me into his office for a meeting and said, I'm developing this character who's going to have burn scars. And as you guys know, I have burn scars over at least half of my body. And he said he was thinking about, he told me, I'm thinking about using an actor with real burn scars because that could be interesting. And he goes, the name of the character that I'm working on is called Fred Krueger. And obviously we know what happened there. They went with Robert with the makeup and everything, and which was a great choice, obviously, but it just an interesting story that Wes talked to me about this character before it ever existed.
I've never heard that story. I can't believe you've never told me that before.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Because really it was like Wes was like, oh, I have to think of the biggest jerk I've ever met in my life. Oh, Kane. Loosely based on Kane Hodder. FYI.
Depend on Tiffany to come up with something like that just to bring you back down.
FYI, that is just our show. It's really just us being mean to Kane. But that's unreal. Like the centipede, not real? Real? What was that?
There was a real one and a fake one. And so they built a cast of my head. I'm looking at you, Tommy, because Tommy literally is the historian of this. And so I just want to make sure I'm telling it right. But they made a cast of my head. So there was a fake head and they pushed a real centipede through. And then they filmed me using this like undulating fake one. And so I think that it was probably a combination of both, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Back and forth. And I mean, I think you can tell when you have the rubbery, you know, undulating one because it's a little different looking. But I think in the book, there's a picture of it. And, you know, when you just kind of look at it now, we all freeze frame things, you can kind of tell. But yeah, it was a combo of you, real centipede, fake head, that whole thing. Yeah.
Now we've had this question on our show, like, would you eat certain things, blah, blah, blah. Like Kane, you would totally just do the real centipede, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Like Felissa?
No, I would not. Definitely not. No.
Now, thanks. Would you have, if it were for Wes Craven?
Yes, I definitely would. I definitely would.
Yeah. I feel like it's like just, if it's for like Joe, whomever in Shakopee, Minnesota, you're like, hell no. Wes Craven, you're like, shove all the centipedes in my mouth.
Anything you want. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shakopee. I've done way worse.
Because that's where we met Kane. I have to hate Shakopee more than any other city in the whole world.
First of all, Shakopee, I've never even heard of Shakopee. What a great name for a city.
That was where a haunted hayride was, wasn't it?
It was Spooky World.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah, Spooky World was in somewhere in Boston, right? Like, and then Shakopee, Minnesota. And it was I can't believe you never went, Amanda.
No, I've never even heard of it.
It was crazy. It was, they would hire you for 2 weeks, right? Wasn't it a 2 week gig, Kane, that we went?
I went for a month one time.
Yeah. And you would stay and you would sign autographs and people would do like a haunted hayride and they would do like, it was bizarre. And my first one I did, I put on this light because it's so pitch black out here and it keeps shorting. So it looks like I'm in lightning. whatever. My first one I was ever at was with Kane and David Naughton. And then the next week, Tiny Tim and somebody else. And it was
Gunner
bizarre.
Used to go there a lot.
That's a great idea. They should bring Gunner that back nature? Where you could go to a convention for like 2 weeks, you know?
That'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool. It was a really cool setup.
Let's bring it back.
Tommy, you have to put it together.
Yeah. Did you ever go to one like that? Tommy's like, huh.
I don't remember ever hearing about trying to get people for that long. I think I remember because that would be like, wow, that's a big deal. But it sounds really, really fun.
My very first convention was Tommy took me and Heather.
Where was it?
It was in
Monster Mania, wasn't it?
It was Monster Mania in Philadelphia. Cherry
Hill, yeah.
Cherry Hill. And oh my gosh, I was, because I actually, Tommy and Heather called me and they were like, you know, Heather's gone to a few conventions. Do you want to go? And I literally was like, an RV convention? Like, what? So they're like, no, like a fan convention. And like, fans, like, I literally couldn't wrap my brain, like, air conditioning? It's like, what do you do with these things? I literally had never heard of them before.
Yeah. When was that? When was the first one? When did you start, Amanda?
98? It was like late 98, I think.
God, we've been a long time. We met before that, obviously. We met a couple years.
Wait, so did you guys meet doing the documentary?
No, we met in Heather.
We met for a long time ago, like.
Oh, 97.
Yeah.
So because a few listeners might not know, Tommy, tell us about the Elm Street doc that you guys did.
Oh, I did I wrote and produced the documentary on Elm Street called Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy, which just kind of goes through the making and the, you know, drama and excitement of making the movies and then release and their legacy and New Line Cinema as a company. And it goes through all the movies. It goes through the original all the way through Freddy versus Jason. And I mean, it was a really great experience to meet everyone who I hadn't already met, because, you know, through Heather and Amanda, you just kind of felt by the law of just knowing people you meet, oh, you should meet so-and-so and you should meet so-and-so. But someone who grew up watching those movies, especially, was really, really great to meet everyone and learn their part and in the franchise and what they wanted to do. And I'm really glad fans responded to it, because we really loved putting that together. We didn't just throw it out. We really wanted to get to the core of why these movies are great and why people have loved them for so long. And I think it succeeded in doing that and brought, I hope and think, Elm Street to a whole new generation that didn't really know about those original movies quite as much, or didn't understand why they were important to people who grew up with them.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing documentary, Tommy.
It is.
It's a great doc. And anyone out there who hasn't seen it, I recommend you absolutely watch it. It really is so so in depth. And
I was just going to say, all encompassing, everything, every aspect of the nightmare
world, yeah,
franchise that you'd like somebody to tell you something new about, it happens in your doc. It's really well done.
And that's why I wrote the book on the first movie, because there was so much to tell about the making of all these movies. And obviously Wes's original is so incredibly important, not just that it started that franchise, but I think it was important for the genre and the way that we look at movie villains, you know, in terms of why they hit and why they don't. And so I wrote a book, Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy, The Making of Wes Craven's original nightmare, because there's just so much story there. And Kane obviously knows about my work because we did Crystal Lake Memories and his name was Jason, and equally important franchises and work in the horror genre. And I think they just opened the doors to exploring movies. I think now we see documentaries on so many movies, and I think that when they're done well, they open up a door into those movies and franchises and characters and actors in a way that you wouldn't normally have seen.
We get
to know you guys in a new, exciting way.
Especially for like some of those original ones where they weren't making DVDs with commentaries at the time. They weren't making, you know, you didn't have all these behind the scenes extras that we can have now, like right at our fingertips. It's like, you just provided like the encyclopedia for it. And my brother and I, he was out here a couple months ago, and we were just huge Elm Street fans. Like, we were just, I tell Kane all the time, it's like, nope, Krueger camp right here, all the way. But our question was like, within each other, was like, how come, you know, you see so much Jason merch, you know, you see so much Michael Myers merch, like, but you really just don't see a lot of Krueger stuff. And my husband's like, looking at us like we're idiots. He's like, child killer? it's like, they don't really have that at Kohl's, you know.
Point.
He's like, you know, Jason kills.
Yeah, but Jason is the same thing.
Yeah, but they're sort of horny teenagers, like not the same as like a little tiny 5-year-old.
I mean, let's face it, Freddie was a child molester at the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of moved away from that later on, but that was the first, you know, story idea. And Tommy and Amanda, do you know what shot I did in a film as Freddy?
No.
I do.
Yes. Like,
I don't. How do I not know? Tell me.
In Jason Goes to Hell, at the end of the movie, Freddy's hand comes out of the ground with the glove on, grabs the hockey mask and pulls it into the ground, which was to set up for the Freddy versus Jason, which took years and years to finally happen. We did Jason X in between. But when I read that in the script, I went to the director and said, I'm doing that shot. I don't care what anybody says. I'm putting the glove on and I'm grabbing the mask. Okay, fine. I actually kept that glove. It was made by Charlie, the same guy that made Robert's gloves. Charlie.
Oh, Gallardo. Wow, those are really rare. Aren't those rare?
I think so. The real ones, used certainly. But that was very cool. I thought I was doing the movie with Robert. In fact, you know, that's old story. But I had a meeting at New Line, and I was given the script and said I was doing the movie, Freddy versus Jason, and then everything changed. So, I thought I was doing it. I wanted it badly. That would have been so much fun because I'd known Robert for so long. It would have been great to do a movie together.
Well, and also the fans would have gone crazy for that too. I mean, not that they didn't go crazy for the movie as is, but like just. Right. Everyone knows you at conventions. Everybody knows you as Jason, right?
And it's everyone loves pain.
Yeah. Like it would have been just cool.
Yeah. I agree.
And then we could have laughed over and over again how Krueger kicked your ass.
Right.
Like on every episode.
I would have been happy to have that, believe me. It was 44 years in this business I've been. That was the low point. I consider it as low a point as me getting burned and almost dying. That's how it is in my head. That equally disappointing that I wasn't cast.
That makes me so sad. Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
And I think part of it was the Vancouver connection. They were shooting up there. So, hey, wait a minute. We got a guy here that can play the character too, you know.
Right.
Get a lot cheaper. Yeah. So I don't know.
We all know that in this business, there are highs, there are lows. And I think, you know, just trying to realize each experience is wonderful and they happen for what sometimes we don't know, you know? But I think we've all been involved in some way with situations like that.
Yeah, and we love it.
And it happens. And, you're just an amazing person and you've done such great work since. So
yeah, you have.
Just move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Move on.
Until next episode. When you tell us.
Until we discuss, we're going to break it down. Next episode is all about that.
As long as I don't knock a guy out at the subway.
That's okay. Right. As long as like you don't get his like non-mask wearing spit all over you and that's how you get COVID. Like then you're good.
I don't mind getting COVID if it's from my fist that knocked his teeth.
I'm going back to the New Year's resolution, Kane. Kill him with kindness. Come on. Okay.
I don't know. I kind of like when you fight. It's funny. Want to go back to like, so you didn't know conventions existed and you ended up at Monster Mania. Were you like, I mean, you had to know that you were part of this huge popular franchise and people knew you, right?
Yeah. Come on.
Not in the way that I learned when we went to the convention, because you have to remember, this is pre-internet, but I'm not around people that are like saying, I love your movies. You know, I'm like around boyfriends or family, or I'm on a set and whatever. Like, I knew people liked it, but I didn't know. It's like now, because of the internet, you can be super aware of what people are thinking about you. But you know, in truth, like career-wise, when I started, like my agents didn't want me to do Nightmare on Elm Street and they wouldn't put it on my resume. So when I was
just because it's a horror movie?
Yes.
And but so Wes had already done cool stuff. Like it's not like he was a nobody director.
No, I know. That was just their thing. And I was young. And then finally, like at some point, But like 10 years later, I put it on my resume. But so nobody brought it up when I was working or whatever. So cut to, I mean, I'd heard of the San Diego Comic-Con, but back then it was literally you went to get comic books mm-hmm. and stuff. So, you know, when Tommy brought it up, we talked and he's like, no, you like go and you sign autographs. And I was like, all right, I'll go. But I was thinking, you know, like one person would maybe walk by or something. I don't know. And that was the craziest thing. We pulled up to the hotel and there was a line wrapped around the outside of the hotel. Yep. And I was like, what is happening? And people were screaming.
Heather and I had only done one or two and they were small LA local kind of thing. We had no idea what like a real convention was. And then you get to Monster Mania where, yeah, there are people winding out the door through the lobby. And I remember Amanda and I, you know, we sat next to each other and we would often just be like, this is crazy.
This is like, so weird.
The line is going out the door. Like, no, we had no idea that it would be like,
yeah.
We just really didn't grasp that concept that, yeah, a couple of people would be coming up and it would be really fun. Not that you'd be signing nonstop for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. It was crazy. And it's such an honor when you're there and the stories. And I mean, I've obviously learned now, like how much that movie and Better Off Dead too, and whatever it mean to people. And I feel like it's super important, like that I just really want to like take in every single person that wants to talk to me and honor their story and give them back really good energy or love or whatever you want to call it. Cause it just seems important. I don't know. I just feel like that's important when I'm there. Cause people are so, they just love that movie so much and have about how it changed their life or they identified with Tina or things. And
right.
I just never want to misstep. I want to really make sure I take care of everyone.
And you do. And that's why we love the horror community. You have a huge body of work, but the horror fans are so loving and loyal and dedicated and there to give you love and tell you how, it's just the greatest joy in the world connecting with people like that.
I agree.
When you understand how much a role you played in a movie may have meant to someone's personal life, it's unbelievable. I was telling Felissa and Tiffany recently that a couple times in conventions in the last year or two, not the last year, but 2 years ago, somebody has come up to my table and they're like, you know, 30 years old or so. And they show me a photograph from a convention where I'm holding an infant and it's them. They're now 30 and they're still coming to say hello. That's how amazing the horror
crazy
thing. That is amazing. That is crazy.
Well, and you guys, go ahead, Tommy, sorry.
Movies are so important to people who grew up with them because there's always a story with I watched A Nightmare on Elm Street and this happened, or I was this old when I saw Friday the 13th, whichever one, or my friends and I went to the video store and we snuck out with Sleepaway Camp. You know, everyone has a story and you grow up watching these movies as sort of a rite of passage and those memories stay with you. So to be able to go and interact with the people that you watch in many ways formative years is so important. And I love that, like Felissa said, the horror community, they give and they receive and it goes both ways. And I think that's just amazing.
And it's just incredible that when someone has a story from a film that they watched that you did, and it's so unbelievable that they're there meeting that person. You can almost put yourself in their shoes. They've admired you for years, and now they're standing in front of you face to face. I could see that happening with me, and it has. When I've met people, it's so meaningful for people to meet someone that they enjoyed watching and now they're actually speaking to them. It sounds corny, but that's how it ends up being.
It's true. And it's also with a movie like Elm Street, at least for me growing up, I mean, with these amazingly strongly written female characters was such a huge thing, especially for that time. That, I mean, I remember seeing you guys for the first time, and I believe it was at a Horror Realm convention, and I had my daughter with me, and I was signing, but she was there, and I'm like, man, like, it was almost like a coup to see you guys, because I remember growing up being like, man, like, these are some strong characters, and these chicks are badass, and like, even though Tina dies, it's like you were just so cool, and that's a big feat, especially for a horror film, which is probably why Wes, you know, is a master. To be able to do that. But you guys have done something, you and Tommy have done something recently that isn't a horror movie, but it's a book.
Yes. Tommy, yes. You tell him a little about it first.
I will. I've always, you know, I'm mainly a screenwriter a lot of times, or a producer on stuff. And I'd always wanted to write a book, and I went to a performing arts high school when I was younger. Way back in the day when I thought little Tommy is going to become an actor, which literally never happened. And I just remember all the drama, and everyone wanted their moment, even as kids, like, you still want the lead. Like, you know, everyone wants to get the lead. No one wants to be the tree. They want to be the lead. And I just thought to myself, as I was getting older and I wanted to write a book, what do I want to write about? And I kept thinking, like, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of movies, horror films, take place in that performing arts environment where you already have these people who are trying to gun for their moment. And what would they do if someone was actually trying to get them and everything? So I came up with this idea for a book called Jinx. And it takes place at a performing arts high school. And it's about a bunch of kids who are trying for their moment. And then someone in a mask is after them. And there's a mystery. It's a very whodunit, why done it. And you know, it did well, and I was really happy with how it was received. I tried to do that kind of throwback 80s, 90s horror thing, and I think it succeeded on the levels that I hoped it would. And then the opportunity came up for an audiobook. And I thought, you know, there's a billion wonderful narrators out there who can bring books to life. But I thought to myself, I really want something that is a connection to what inspired me to write this book, which was, you know, 80s horror. And I needed a really fantastic actress. So lucky me, I happened to be friends with Amanda Wiss. And I mentioned it to her. And I said, look, you know, I don't even know if this is something you have ever thought of doing or if you want to do, but this is what I'm thinking. And before you even say anything, why don't you read the book and tell me if you're even interested? Because if you don't like the book or you don't respond to the material, I totally get it. Because I needed someone who could bring all of these characters to life, because I want people to, you know, like them and be with them and want them to live or want them to die and who's the killer. So I asked Amanda, she read the book, and it seemed to work, right, Amanda?
Yeah. No, and it was fun. First of all, I loved the book, and I so at the beginning of quarantine, a really nice editor named Mark dropped off sound equipment, because obviously at that time all the studios were closed and everything. And Steven built me, we called it lovingly the sound yurt. Like, in half the closet, it came out and around and was covered in, so it looked like we had like this ginormous igloo jutting out of the closet. And I'd go in there with my little camping lantern. And I FaceTimed with the editor, and I was able to hook everything up. And then we spent like a week, which would have taken like 2 minutes in a sound studio, but I'd record a couple sentences and send it to him, and it'd be like, move the mic an inch to the right. And then I'd record some sentences. And so that was actually the most tedious thing, was finding the proper mic placement. And he must have been frustrated too, because it's, you know, stuff that you would do in 2 seconds in a studio. But it was really fun. I mean, I haven't listened to the whole book. I've listened to samples of it, and it was really, really fun. And Tommy sent me a lookbook, basically, of, because I, you know, wrote down all the characters, and he gave me ideas of what they were like. And
it died.
Yeah. So it was really fun. And so
that's so exciting. Where can we get this book, hear this book, see this book, Tommy and Amanda?
Hold it up. Hold up the book.
Let's see.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. Who did the art for it?
The art was done by a guy, an artist, an incredible artist named Sam Sheeran. And the killer wears the mask on the front. It's like theater mask. It's like the, you can see the one side is the happy, the one side is the sad, but they meet in the middle to have this kind of like sort of evil, you know, scowl. And I just explained to him, I said, you know, this is what the mask looked like. And I gave him the description that I wrote in the book. And then he came back with this art. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
That's amazing.
And the audio recently launched. It's available on Amazon and Audible. Paperback is available on Amazon as well. And I'm now the first in a trilogy. So I'm in the middle of writing the second book called Cursed. So
the significance of the title Jinxed is just Jinxed? What it sounds like.
What?
The title of the book is just what it sounds like, the meaning of it?
Yeah, it's Jinxed. It's about there's some superstitious stuff going on. Like, you know, when some people get killed, it links into those kind of superstitions we all grew up with.
Okay.
Yeah, like don't step on the cracks and all that.
Is the purpose of, not the purpose, but is the hope to make it into a film at some point? Or is it strictly, okay.
I just said that quickly.
I'm like, I want to play the teacher. There's this great teacher. I had so much fun reading her. I was like, I'll even audition for it. I just want that part.
Well, you kind of already auditioned, didn't you?
Yeah.
I know somebody that could play the killer.
I would love.
Oh, is Tony Moran available?
Oh, wow.
Oh. You are tough.
And we love Tony. Oh,
we do love Tony.
Oh, but, boy.
That's amazing. So there's going to be three books. And Amanda, are you going to be voicing the other books?
Am I, Tommy?
Yeah, absolutely. I would not let you do it.
Okay. And then the fun thing was after... I did Tommy's, the editor had, I got to do two more books. I got to do this really, this one book where, I don't know if it's going to be any good. I had to do a British accent through the whole thing.
Oh, let's hear it now, right now, Amanda.
No, and there would be moments where Stephen, you know, could hear me outside the sound yurt and he'd be like, so now what accent was that? Like, it's British. And then I got to do another one that was another, they're all three of them are scary. But I don't know what's going to happen with those other two.
That's amazing.
I mean, there's not a lot going on. You're trapped in your house. So honestly, the audiobook thing, I think, fell into our laps at a really, really great time.
It really did. And then I think, like, has anybody approached you about making it into a movie? It would just be so good. It's such an obvious movie.
Yeah, we've had a few conversations, you know, with some people. You know, we're really looking for someone who really gets it. Again, you have to kind of have that idea of, you know, the nostalgia of the 80s and the 90s horror and the mass killer and the whodunit, why done it, and making it work. And yeah, I mean, of course I wrote it. I'm going to say, I think it would make a great movie, but I really do think it would make a really good movie. I think it would be fun and scary. And it's very, you know, it's very Urban Legend, very Scream, very I Know What You Did Last Summer, scary and fun and funny when it needs to be. So yeah, anyone out there who's looking for something like that.
And you're already set. You have five of your cast or four of your cast members here.
Yeah, look,
right
we here. Already have a cast.
We have the faculty right here.
Mm-hmm. The faculty.
You have the faculty and the masked killer. You don't really need anything else, Tommy, except money. Ugh, whatever. It's so easy.
Money. Damn it. Money. And tell them, look, I'm like a stage mom. Tell them about the Christmas book that just came out.
Ooh.
It's another scary
our fans
book.
Love Christmas.
I yeah,
really?
I,
sorry, are you no?
It's sort of like Christmas with a hint of darkness. If you like, you know, Scrooge and It's a Wonderful Life and that what if kind of thing. I did write a book. Oh my goodness, I happen to have a copy right there.
What a coincidence.
God, what are the odds?
It's called Right Christmas. And
can we get this on Amazon too, Tommy?
This is on Amazon as well.
Can I buy them both together?
You can buy as many together as you
that's what we're all doing. And we want everyone to do that.
It's basically like a what if Christmas didn't exist. It's about a woman who wakes up and the holiday has vanished.
Whoa.
It doesn't, people don't know what she's talking about, but it's not just that. It's what Christmas means to us. And if that is torn away, who do you become? And some people definitely don't do well without Christmas. So I had a blast writing it. I love Christmas. I love horror. It's not horror, but it does tilt into that darkness because some people who are all about the holiday taken away from them become all about something else.
Sorry, my dog is going crazy right now. He loves Christmas and is like, what the fuck, Tommy?
Apparently. It sounds so cute. He sounds like he's just like, where is everyone?
I kind of think he's like, why is no one down here feeding me? That's amazing, you guys. Like, I honestly I have trouble writing, like, you know, our three paragraph intros. So writing a book just sounds daunting and crazy. I mean, Kane, you've done it.
I love your book, Kane. I didn't really write it.
I just dictated a story.
It's still writing a book.
I know, but it's not fiction. That's hard. Fiction is hard. Telling your story, not so hard.
Yeah. You know, the book was super engaging. And I mean, that's not a given just because somebody's telling their story. I thought it was a really good book. I was really moved by it. I thought it was beautiful.
This is the portion of our show where we have to all compliment Kane a lot so he doesn't feel sad.
Just can't give me a fucking break.
Oh, Kane.
You know what, Kane, when you were telling that story about not getting, I mean, obviously all of us have one of those, like, we just go, oh, that's just such a heartbreaker.
Four films in a row.
Well, that's terrible.
And then told I'm doing the fifth one, and then I get replaced.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. You can't always expect just because you've done one before that you'll be asked to do it again. But when you're asked to do it again and given the script, then you think you have it.
It's a heartbreaker. It definitely is.
Oh.
No, there's nothing worse than that. I mean, we make jokes about it all the time, but that's a shitty thing that Felissa makes jokes sometimes.
But that
sucks and it's awful. Yeah. And like I've lost really tiny jobs and feel terrible and to lose and not get something like that.
We all know that it's a rejection, you know, it plays into a lot more than just the fact that this is a role and a film I want to do. There's so many other facets to it and it does linger and it takes a long time to get over it. But you know how deeply we love you, Kane, and we just want you to
forget about it. This isn't about me, so we have...
Well,
no, but it is. We're all in this together.
We all get it. Well, I had a funny thing happen. This isn't like a heartbreaker thing, but I did have one of those. It was about a TV series, but I was on a panel shortly after Wes Craven passed away, and it was, I don't even remember who all the actors were on it. I think you might have been there, Tommy. I'm not sure, but it was people from Scream, and I don't even know who was there, but everybody was like talking and going on and telling all these great stories, and they've all worked with him multiple times. And finally the moderator is like, so you never worked with him again? Anyway, it was really weird. It was like somebody being like, so why aren't you married? Like, what's wrong with you that they didn't? And so I'm like, I lost him in the divorce. I was friends with his wife. They got divorced and he never spoke to me again. So I was like never in another nightmare movie.
Could you have been?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess...
Yeah, like as her friend coming back and stuff.
Coming back.
Could have 100% had a great role in the Meadow one, you know?
The New Nightmare.
God, I was like, what's the name of that one again?
I love that Tommy knows everything. Tommy, you're so amazing.
It's true. I will text Tommy and I'll sometimes I'm on and be like, do you know where I put the bread? Like, do you know where anything is in my apartment?
Do you, I mean, we're really excited about the book. I'll definitely listen to it. Like, we're big fans of, especially audio stuff, because I know like Felicity and Kane are always on the road traveling somewhere. So, and I like to listen to it so I could tune out my children.
Oh my gosh. I hope it, and if you don't like it, like you'll like the book, but if you don't like what I did, just lie.
We love you so much. Tiffany, everything you do is spectacular.
I'm good at lying.
Oh, yeah. Oh boy.
Can I tell one quick Robert Englund story?
Yes.
Very
yes.
quick. When I was at a convention with Robert, I think it was Monster Mania, actually, and I came back in from doing a little where we talk in front of the audience, and I was coming back to my table.
A panel?
Yeah, a panel, exactly, sorry. And I was heading back to my table, and this couple was looking at Robert like in awe that it's actually Freddy Krueger. And I stopped and I said, what are you looking at? That's Robert Englund. I said, oh, it is. And I said, oh, I gotta go say hello. And I went over and went behind his table. He was standing up and I grabbed his ass. And the couple was like, and I said, they told me to do it. And got him in trouble. But anyway.
That's very funny.
That's great.
Well, I love that.
Everyone loves Robert Englund too. Like I told you guys this before, but we had it was like a reality competition show that we attached Robert to. And all these people came, you know, we were brought over to, I think it was like Comedy Central was going to do like live action shows. And we get into this big giant boardroom. It's me, my producing partner, Robert. And all these people sit down. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be in the bag. They're so excited. Look how many of them there are here. It was all just to meet Robert. Like, I really like halfway through the meeting realized, I'm like, they don't give one flying fuck about this show, but all right. It's just a big Freddy Krueger.
You'd think if they loved him, they would want to do the show. I mean,
you would think. I think they were
segue.
I think it may have gone that way, but it was really just everyone came there to meet him.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't blame them. I was tickled too. I was like, wait, our agent was like, yeah, we can attach Robert Englund. I'm like, what? Wait,
I know, but that's still like you go, oh. Now, Tommy, you have to leave, don't you?
I do have to leave. I have to go, actually.
Aww. Do you have any other projects you want to tell everybody about? Like maybe a movie that you and I might be doing?
Yeah, you know, Amanda and I, we actually worked together a couple of years ago on a movie that I directed called The Id, which I'm super proud of, and I'm so happy we got to work together. And Amanda just like blew the lid off the performance of this role that she played, Meredith. It was so good. And we have talked about working together more and more. So I love that we did the audiobook, but right now I'm developing a project, a psychological thriller with some pretty dark moments that I'm excited about. And I'm writing the script now. And hopefully that will come to fruition as well, because I want to work with Amanda again, because we just have this synergy and this kind of language and this unspoken thing where it's like, you know, I look at her and she's like, oh, I got you. Or she'll look at me and I'm like, okay, I get it. So doing that, and I'm writing, like I said, I'm writing Cursed, the second book in the Jinx trilogy, and just, you know, pounding the pavement like we all do.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, Tommy, for being on here.
Thank you, Tommy. We love you. We love you, Amanda.
Let us know when
convention soon again.
The next books are done. Come on here and tell us all about it. And we will have read it and be ready to review.
I love it. This is so much fun. Oh, go on. Sorry, Tommy.
Just saying, I'm going to say my sign off. I'm going to say bye. Thank you so much. I love all of you guys. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye, Tommy.
We love you, Tommy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Amanda, you have to stay for a second.
Okay.
Because we need to talk about something that I see, because I stalk you on Instagram. We are like mutual stalking.
Yes.
Miskatonic University?
Yes.
Yes. With our buddy Billy Butler.
I'm so excited.
I adore that man.
Yeah, it's Full Moon Features, and it's an Amazon Prime, and it's an H.P. Lovecraft universe. It's called Miskatonic U, The Resonator. And We did the first two. We did the pilot, and that airs at the end of this month. And then if
it's a show.
Yeah. And then we'll come back and there are six more episodes to shoot if Amazon Prime gives it the... So we want everyone to watch it. It's really good. It's
everybody watch it.
It's in the H.P. Lovecraft universe. It takes place at this college. There's a lot of science fiction stuff and creepy things. And
who do you play?
I play Professor McMichaels, the professor of spiritual studies. And then my sort of rival professor is Michael Paré, plays Professor... Michael Paré, I can't remember.
He's great.
He's amazing. He's amazing. And so he, the story is really about these college students. So, you know, they're all young and gorgeous and, I mean, unbelievably gorgeous. And they're all so talented. And so I really feel like it's got like, you know, One Tree Hill or like, you know, one of those.
It looks that way, and
you can't really tell what year it is. Like the only like rule, there's no cell phones, but people have computers, and then they all wear these cool uniforms, but they're all a little different. And it's like, is this the 60s? Is this now? Is this the 80s? Like you can't really, and it's purposefully shot. Like my clothes are like 1940s. It's like, so you kind of are
weird.
Like, so you'll never really know what year it is. And so, and then my character is, you know, I don't, there'll be lots of twists and turns and you know, pretty much everybody is not what they seem and has like superpowers and
Billy's kind of like a crazy jack of all trades director, right? Like didn't he do like a bear movie and horror films and then like Melissa, didn't you do something with him?
He's so talented. I love him. He's a dear friend.
He did a musical bear movie.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was amazing. It was a Christmas type movie. Just so everybody gets to enjoy that. And then I'm like looking, I had a root canal. And so my lip is like, my face is drooping here.
No, we don't see it.
I was actually in my head when you first signed on thinking like, that's not fair. You're like a witch because you look exactly the same as you did in Elm Street. Like you do.
I have like a 5,000 volt ring light.
Like, don't tell the secrets.
God. I think this is not even moving. It's like, oh,
well, we're all gonna have to watch.
Yeah,
and we're all gonna listen to the book.
Yay!
We love you, and I hope we see you at convention soon.
I know. I hope so. I mean, there are they. I think they're gonna try to come back, in the summer, right?
Yeah.
Like the bigger ones in the summer.
Yeah.
Has anybody here been vaccinated?
Not yet. I wish.
Me too.
I wish.
You should be vaccinated.
Why?
I don't know.
Because of my age.
Yes. No, I'm like right nipping at your heels. I'm like, get me in there.
I'm waiting for.
We signed up on the website. I mean, you know, so we'll, you know.
On the SAG thing?
No, we signed up on the city. And they'll supposedly email you when it's your turn.
But yeah.
I don't know. But then I saw last night they're going to do them at Walgreens. I was like, you know
what? That's what I heard too. But like, it's kind of all over the place, I think, I think they just don't know. It's like they get them in and then they get an influx of other like healthcare people and stuff like that. Because I was supposed to be able to vaccinate my mom. And then with her surgery coming up, they were like, no, because she might not be out of the hospital in time to get the second dose. And so they were like, and then there's like a wait period to take the first dose again. So I think it's just, there's so many different variables. And
by the time we all get it, they'll just have the one shot. Hopefully.
That's right.
That'll be great. They'll be like the perk to waiting. Yeah. Right.
But all you guys are holding up fine in quarantine and hanging out and taking care of it.
We're doing great. I'm actually filming right now. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Are you having fun?
I'm having a blast. I'm having so much
fun. Tell us really quick, what set are you on? Can you talk about it?
I'm on a film called Stream with Fuzz on the Lens Productions and Damian Leone. They did Terrifier and Terrifier 2. Wow. And they're like a family to me. And I had the best time. I'm on set with Tim Reed, Danny. I play Danny Roebuck's wife.
Oh, he's the best.
And there's an amazing actor, Bob Adrian from Conjuring 2, who's spectacular.
Oh, that's so
cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I know, you know, it was interesting filming during this time. Like we had to go, and at the same time, Stephen was working on Bosch, and we had to like, they were like, you go get tested, and like we had to like quarantine. Like they're like, you literally can't leave your house. And so we like 2 or 3 tests before we start filming, and then you get a test the day you start. Uh-huh. My test came back positive on Miskatonic U, the rapid test.
But it was a false positive.
It was a false positive, yeah. But it was, it's created scary. So much chaos, and it was like 4 hours of total chaos.
How did you feel? Like, did you start feeling sick? Like, oh shit, I'm actually like psychosomatic? Because that's what I would do.
Yeah.
It was so weird. First of all, because like I literally am queen of quarantine, and we've been tested so many times. Like I'm so cautious. I'm just, you know, I don't have anywhere to go. So, but so I was like, how can this be? But I felt like I was moving backwards down a tunnel. Like when the COVID person on set was like, because I walk in and I'm like, oh, here's the result of my test. It's negative. And she goes, it's positive. I was negative for the flu, but positive. And I was like, what? And I was just so crazy. And so I got pushed into this corner. Like they bring out this fumigation stuff. And then like everybody, like such chaos that they send me home. I come in, I yell at Steve, and I'm like, where have you been? I got COVID. And then we rushed to go get the better test. And then it came back and it was negative. And then I took another rapid test and it was negative. And then we started filming. It was crazy.
Well, it's also crazy because, like, you know, if you're on a set and, like, you know, you're talking about like them fumigating you. Like, I remember it was pre-COVID, but I was on a plane and my husband was going. We did a family trip to Mexico. He was still working in Prague. So he left from Mexico to Prague. I was taking the kids back here to California. And on the flight, our little guy, Max, got like a crazy fever and started like puking on the plane. And the like steward came up, I'm like, can you bring me some like towel, like some ice packs? Like I had Tylenol with me, like just because I'm a mom, right? And you have a bag full of crap. And she's like, does he have a rash? And I'm looking, I'm like, no. And like all of a sudden the pilot of the plane came out and was like, does he have a rash? And I'm like, no. And like they're like checking him, and it was super weird, and I was terrified I'm gonna get off the plane and they're gonna like rush us away like ET. But it was pre-COVID, but like those kind of things, you're like, if you're this communal disease, what happens? And we ended up getting off, and he just had like the flu, and I brought him straight to his pediatrician and they tested him for everything. And
What did they think it was? What's the deal with
the
rash? I think
it was the what was the disease that people were getting from mosquitoes that were making the babies?
West Nile or Zika?
Zika, I think. Or yeah, that's what it's called, right? Zika.
I remember that.
And I think that's what they thought it was. And yeah. I guess because that being highly contagious to people that were pregnant, and I guess then they found out like it could affect men's sperm if like they're around it. So that's what they thought it was, and they needed to trace it. If it was, which I'm happy that they have that kind of tracing in place, yeah. But it was scary.
You know what? I actually have to run because I have to go to a rehearsal in like.
Well, let me wrap up Casualty Friday. You guys, this has been super fun. We've never had 2 guests before on our show, which is really exciting. We're so happy it was you and Tommy. And, you know, we are huge Elm Street fans. We do wish Kane was in that franchise as well.
Me too.
And maybe it will happen one of these days. You know, Billy Butler, make the next Elm Street Jason crossover with me and Felissa. And thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We will see you next week with a special Just the Three of Us episode.
I love you guys so much. Thank you for having me.
Amanda, we love you.
I love you back.
Listen to Jinx and Miskatonic U. Bye.
Bye.